Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of Understanding the Misunderstood. Today we're going to be covering eating disorders and a bit of body dysmorphia. And I just wanted to give a quick disclaimer before getting into the topic. I had previously said in my last podcast episode that I would have a special guest to interview, but I actually am changing my mind and wanted to instead cover a few more topics before I do so, because I kind of want to get the basics down of the research for each mental disorder I want to cover, and then I want to bring in people to interview. So they're going to happen, these interviews, and I hope that you guys are excited for them, because not only am I bringing in people who I know from school, who I'm friends with, who I don't know as well, I'm also bringing in adults and teachers and educators and professionals who actually know what they're talking about as well. So this is a pretty wide topic. Eating disorders actually are a lot more complicated than I thought they were. And speaking from personal experience, it has been difficult in today's society for me at least, to go through life allowing myself to eat whatever I want. And to a certain extent, it is okay to watch what you eat, but I think that for a while I started to really restrict a lot of foods and start eating very little. And so this topic is really important to me and something that I want to talk about, because I think it's very misrepresented in our culture and in the media, and I just wanted to really dive into this topic. So just some basic information. Eating disorders are basically qualified as serious and sometimes fatal illnesses that reflect issues with a person's eating habits, behaviors, thoughts, and emotions. An eating disorder can also be identified if a person has an obsession with their food intake, body weight, or body shape. The most common eating disorders are anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder. So those are the three main or most common types of eating disorders. And to hop right into them, anorexia is a condition where people avoid food, limit their food intake, or restrict the type of food that they eat. People with anorexia may also excessively weigh themselves, and even if they are underweight, will see themselves as overweight. Now, something that I didn't know is that there are actually two subtypes of anorexia within this very broad eating disorder, and those are restrictive and binge-purge subtypes. Restrictive is where people limit the amount and type of food they eat, while binge-purge usually happens in the same way as restrictive, but it also has the addition of someone eating large amounts of food in a short period of time, and then vomiting or using laxatives to get rid of the food that they ate. Anorexia also has an extremely high death rate compared to other mental disorders, and people with anorexia can die from medical issues that are closely related to starvation. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for people diagnosed with anorexia. Now, just to kind of put my own thoughts into words about anorexia, I think that it's really interesting that there are multiple subtypes within this eating disorder, because while it seems very specific that anorexia is a type of eating disorder, it's really interesting seeing that there are actually subtypes within this subtype of an eating disorder. I think that it's very misrepresented, just because anorexia can be seen as something that is controllable, but a lot of the time it actually is not. And so I want to highlight that something people don't realize is that these eating disorders are very, very difficult to get rid of, and that it takes a lot of courage to get help, and that it's normal to feel bad about getting help, but that you shouldn't, and that it's okay to reach out to people that you trust and that you think can support you in this process, because no one has to suffer in this way. Now, hopping right into bulimia, this is a condition where people frequently eat large amounts of food and do not have control over these episodes. People with bulimia also binge eat and follow this with vomiting, using laxatives, fasting, overly exercising, or all of these things at once. Now, the difference between people with anorexia and people with bulimia is that people with bulimia can be underweight, overweight, or a healthy weight, but that they still participate in these episodes and actions because they think that binge eating and purging is also going to have an effect on their body type and their health. Now, one of the other subtypes is binge eating disorder, which is different because it's not binge purging, it's just binge eating. And it's a condition where people lose control over how much they eat, and as I said, unlike bulimia, do not follow such eating with purging, excessive exercise, or fasting. People with this disorder are usually overweight or obese, and what's really interesting to me, something I didn't know, is that binge eating disorder is the most common eating disorder in the United States. I just did a quick Google search on why do people develop eating disorders and the psychology behind it, and I first just wanted to point out that there's one subtopic that is a question that someone asked that is, who is most likely to have an eating disorder? And this specific website basically says that teenage girls and young women have the highest risk factor for developing eating disorders based on age. But something that I wanted to talk about is the fact that men and young boys can also experience eating disorders and that they should be looked at in the exact same way and held as a priority for all people and in our society in every way that women and women's eating disorders are. I think that a lot of the time, as a society, we forget that men can also struggle with the same things women can, and women can struggle with the same things that men can. And because of toxic masculinity and social media and the way our society works, it's really difficult for men to show any vulnerability. And so, especially something like this that is a quote-unquote female-dominated disorder, I think that it's very important to note that it's not only a women's issue and that it's actually an issue that men and women can both deal with. And I think that's something that's so important to highlight, because I don't want anyone on here who is a man or, you know, a young boy or whomever thinking that they don't have the support from those around them in dealing with an eating disorder and invalidate themselves. I do not want that to happen. So I want to normalize the fact that men and women and whomever else can develop an eating disorder. So I found this website called NEDA or NEDA. I don't really know what it is, but it basically talks about some common myths with eating disorders. And like all episodes, I wanted to talk about them because I think that they are underrepresented and should be talked about more. The first myth is that eating disorders are a choice and it's something that someone can snap out of or easily get rid of. And something that people don't know is that eating disorders are very complex medical and psychiatric illnesses that patients do not choose and parents do not cause. They can, but it's something that is developed over time, and there are several different types, as I said, of eating disorders that we talked about today, and that it's really important to note that there's a lot of research that shows the biological factors that play an important role in who develops an eating disorder, and they commonly co-occur with other mental health conditions like major depression, anxiety, social phobia, and obsessive compulsive disorder. Another common myth is that everyone has an eating disorder these days and in our culture and in our society. And although our current culture is very obsessed with food and weight and disordered patterns of eating are common, clinical eating disorders are less so. A little fact that I found very interesting was that there's a lot of historical data that reveals that some of the earliest documented cases of eating disorders were actually associated with religious fasting, and putting this type of thinking in a religious and traditional space is something that really can cause an eating disorder, especially in people who are very young and who practice a certain religion or tradition at a early age. And I think that that's something that's, one, very important to understand, and also says a lot about the history of eating disorders and that they've actually been around for a while, but that our current day and our current time is actually addressing them. Something that I didn't know that is a myth is that a lot of parents actually think that they caused their child's eating disorder when a lot of the time they don't. And I'm not going to say that they always don't, because that actually can happen and it has happened and it's very common, but a lot of the time parents think that they are the cause of their child's eating disorder if, you know, they shame them for something or didn't, you know, truly think through a comment about their weight or body or something like that. But there have been a lot of improvements actually with the inclusion of parents in the recovery process and in the treatment process. So studies actually are showing that for the people who are not responsible for their children's eating disorders, it is very beneficial for them to be a part of their children's recovery process. Another myth is that eating disorders aren't a big deal, when, as I said before, eating disorders actually have the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric illness, and up to 20% of individuals with chronic anorexia will die as a result of their illness. Something that's also interesting is that anorexia, bulimia, and another eating disorder that's can, you know, not be specified, show that all eating disorders have similar mortality rates. Besides the medical complications from binge eating, purging, starvation, and overexercise, suicide is also common among individuals with eating disorders and is something that needs to be addressed as soon as possible, because not a lot of people understand that the amount of suicides that happen in the US or elsewhere actually have a lot to do with eating disorders. Another myth is that anorexia is the only serious eating disorder. And what's really interesting that I said before, bulimia had a mortality rate that is actually higher than anorexia, and 1 in 20 people with eating disorders died as a result of their illness. What's interesting is that also excessive exercise can increase the risk of death in individuals with eating disorders because it increases the amount of stress on the body. So when people think that anorexia is the only eating disorder or the only serious one, something that they need to consider is that people who are bulimic actually can experience a higher death rate. Not to say that it is more important or more severe or should be prioritized over anorexia, but I think because anorexia has already gotten the recognition it deserves, I think bulimia needs to be something that is talked about daily and something that people actually care to learn about. Another myth is that if you don't see someone engaging in disordered eating, that you don't need to worry about them. A lot of times, and this goes for not just eating disorders but all other mental disorders, many people with eating disorders go out of their way to hide the symptoms of their illness out of shame or out of fear. And it's not uncommon for loved ones to not really realize how severe the eating disorders are when a diagnosis is made, or when people close to the person suffering become aware that they are struggling. And what's really important is that if you are aware someone is struggling, it is important to express concern, empathy, and compassion, and encourage the individual to seek help. A really interesting myth that I found new and fascinating is that if your loved one isn't ready to recover from an eating disorder, that there's nothing you can do until that they are. Sometimes it's very difficult to recognize an eating disorder when you have one, and while some people might want to stop this behavior, they are very afraid. And much like all other mental illness and mental disorders, it's very difficult to reach out and seek help, especially if you, one, don't think you deserve it, two, don't think anyone will help you, or three, don't understand or underestimate the severity of your disorder. A myth that I actually didn't know was a myth is that a family member won't recover until they discover the reason they developed their eating disorder. I think that this one is really interesting, and while a lot of people can point to a reason that caused their eating disorder, a lot of people with eating disorders actually don't have a specific reason, and there's also not really any evidence that uncovering the cause of an eating disorder is correlated with recovery. So if someone has developed an eating disorder, the priorities of treatment are to restore normal eating habits and weight. Finally, the last myth that I want to cover is that if a loved one insists they are fine, that you should believe them. The issue is that accurate self-awareness is something that a lot of people with eating disorders do not have. And while it's not something you should shame them about, it's something that you should bring up to them about. And it might not be recognized as an issue from the individual that's struggling, but it's really important to understand that if you think someone's struggling at all and are trying to say that they are fine, it's really important to check up on them and make it consistent and make it a priority, because a lot of the times we check up on them once and then kind of forget about it and it is swept under the rug. But what's really important is consistency and compassion and learning that people sometimes need the push to get help. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and please continue to let me know topics that you would love me to cover, because I love hearing your guys' input. Thank you for listening to Understanding the Misunderstood. See you next week.